As you probably know from talking to me, I love going to metal shows. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't talk after seeing Red Fang in the Riot Room in Kansas City one time.
And, were you just like in the pit, like,
oh dude,
going harder?
Yeah, and the Riot Room's not very big. The description Riot Room is very appropriate. So it's like a square. You walk in, there's a square bar. There's space behind the bar, and then just off to the right, it just kind of keeps going and drops down into this little stage area. So pretty fucking wild to see a metal band in there, and especially one like Red Fang. So it was fun.
Man, yeah, that kind of reminds me, there was this place in Charlotte. I don't remember what it was called, but I mean, every time you were in there, you were just waiting. Oh, the Milestone, that's what it was. Like, you were just waiting for the floor to fall through.
Yeah. The Riot Room, man. It's tell me this, was what color was it painted inside? Because the Riot Room was black.
Yeah, it was dark inside. I just remember it being dingy more than anything.
Yes, kind of grody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a good way, in a comforting way.
Oh, no, I love the Riot Room. I go back to the Riot Room in a heartbeat to see a metal show. Just freaking screaming at my buddy next to me, hey, do you want a PBR or something? $2 beer. I gotta go walk back there and get it and then find
sure,
him.
Yeah,
you know how that goes. I think that's maybe the only show I've ever I was gonna say that's maybe the only show where I took a break to go to the bathroom. Usually I just hold it. Like, I stand up there and just hold it, and I'm just like, I got to hold
suffer
it,
suffer through.
Yeah, yeah. But that one, I was like, all right, I got to get out of here. And actually, one of the albums I have that we're going to talk about, not today, but a different one, I bought while I was taking a leak. So we'll talk about that. Is that Demons album.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I'm just picturing like the merch guy walking up next to you, like an armful of stuff, and hey. We'll get to
that.
Hey, man. What you got in your hands there? Oh, man.
All right. Metal shows. That'll kind of segue into what we're going to talk about today. Eh?
No doubt. Yeah. So, all right, everyone. Welcome to episode 15 of Jay and Joey on the Record. I'm Joey.
I'm Jay.
Man, I am excited for today's episode. Jay, tell our listeners what's in store for this week in case they haven't figured it out already.
We are going to be talking about new wave of British heavy metal.
And what does that mean?
These are bands that came after the old wave of British heavy metal, which is going to be like Black Sabbath, Led Zeppelin, Deep Purple, kind of those bands. So this comes after. So mid-70s, early 80s, and it's kind of metal music infused with the speed of the punk at the time is really what it is.
You're going to be very familiar with a lot of these today.
Do you have anything in particular to say about the new wave of British heavy metal? Anything about it that stands out to you just as a collection of music?
I mean, I love that era. It's kind of what really hooked me in to metal. That and Metallica's Ride the Lightning. Do you remember the first time you heard these artists or the moments where something clicked and you were like, what is this? Because I definitely do.
I mean, I'm interested in hearing yours. I mean, just mentioning a couple, this was definitely in like junior high or early high school for me. So I didn't get into it real early, but pretty early in my life. I actually remember some kids in band, I was in the band, a couple other trumpet players were talking about Iron Maiden, and they were like, you got to listen to this Iron Maiden song. They played guitar, so they were playing an Iron Maiden song in the basement. Okay. I'm sure it sounded like total shit.
Yeah.
Because Iron Maiden would be tough. But they're like, you got to hear this. So that's the first time I heard Iron Maiden, and I was pretty well hooked at that point. So I don't know. What do you got? What's let's talk about your moment.
just really getting into it was someone trying to steer me away from Korn and Limp Bizkit and towards metal like this. So we were talking about metal and he was like, no, 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 you have to hear this. And he played Metallica's Ride the Lightning. And then I was like, oh my God, what else exists? And I mean, that's more on the thrash side. And he was like, well, check this band out. And he played Judas Priest. And then the Iron Maiden just picked up from there. Like, yeah. And I fell for it hard. Like, there's just so much I love. Like, I love the metal community. I love metal fans, metal music.
I mean, my experience wasn't the same, but the things I took away from it and the things I liked about it, very similar. I mean, mm-hmm. I grew up in a small town in Kansas. Not a lot of people listening to new wave of British heavy metal in that town, really. Except for these kids I was in band with, and it was really cool. You know, once you start going down that path, you're exactly right when you're like, what else is out there? Because I was the same thing. Like, what else is out there? What else is like this? It's so weird. You're exactly right. It's such a positive kind of community. I mean, I remember being at a metal show one time, and I mean, it's you know, they got the pit opening up. People are slamming into each other and stuff. But at the same time, somebody goes down. Everyone's just like, all right, help this guy up. Let's get him up. Help him out.
Yeah. Somebody goes down. Like, there's the person on the outside whose job is to, like, scoop someone up.
Yeah, save this dude's life.
Yeah. It's so much fun.
It is. I love the community. So, anyway, shall we dive in here?
Yeah, let's start off with the band that is arguably the godfathers of the new wave.
Real quick, I'll talk about the structure of what we're going to do today. So I have we're going to talk about six albums like we have been, two a piece from three different bands. So we're really talking about three bands today, two albums each. And the first one we're going to talk about is Judas Priest. Was this the, you know, Judas Priest, you said this was number one, the first one you heard from this genre?
This is, yeah. And it's actually the next album that we're going to talk about.
Nice.
But yeah.
So we're kicking it off. We're going to go chronological by band. So we're going to talk first about Sad Wings of Destiny. This is Judas Priest's second studio album. It was released March 23rd, 1976 on Goal Records. So this is by far the oldest album we're going to talk about today. The rest of them came out within a 3-year span of each other, but this one's 1976. How familiar were you with Sad Wings of Destiny?
Not terribly. This is one where I had heard before, but I had never really thought to go back and revisit it. And I don't, it's cool to hear such an influential band's very first album when they have such a stacked catalog after that, and to see like what the link was, how they grew, how things changed, what they were influenced by.
You know, it's really cool to think about chronologically where this one is with the other stuff that's going on. You know, like I said, the new wave of British heavy metal, but this is 1976, you know, Black Sabbath still kicking around. There's, you know, it's early new wave of British heavy metal, and it's really, really cool. So a couple other little tidbits about this album. When they were creating it, finances were super tight. So the record label, Gull Records, G-U-L-L, gave them a $2,000 budget for each of the first two albums. While they were recording this, all of the band members restricted themselves to one meal per day because that's all they could afford.
Oh my God.
They all took part-time work. You know, some of them were gardeners, some of them worked at a factory, one of them was driving a delivery van. So then they went in the studio and they recorded this badass thing. So diving in here, what'd you think of it?
I mean, it sounded like they had a $2,000 budget, but they made it go a long way. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is. It's such a, just diving in here. So I wasn't super familiar with this either. I mean, I've heard it specifically. I've heard the Ripper more than once, and I don't remember why, but I've definitely heard the Ripper a lot. Just diving in here. What stood out to you initially, first song or all the songs, or, you know, what's standing out to you?
The first track, Victim of Changes, it's kind of bluesy, and it almost sounds more like what they were influenced by than what they became later, which is fine. The guitar solo around the midway point, like, it's not exactly distorted and the production isn't great, and it makes so much sense based on what you said about the budget, which I think maybe actually makes this album work better knowing that now.
So this is, I'm a Judas Priest. I like Judas Priest, but I wouldn't say I'm like a real super fan of them, but Rob Halford's voice on this song is so fucking awesome. Like, his voice in general is incredible. He's shrieking like a banshee at different times. He's got this weird little staccato lyrical thing he's doing. I wish I could remember the lyrics because I would repeat what he's doing, but it's so cool. His voice is really, really cool.
It really is, like, especially in that last section or the last part of the song. There's that little section of rhythm with the bass that's like doo-doo, doo-doo, and just Halford's falsetto just wailing. And I mean, I did not need anything else. I was set, like, in the seat, ready to go.
Me too, dude. He's just shrieking like a banshee, and it's just really heavy riff too. It's got everything. That was kind of my main note, man. It's got great singing, great solos, like you said, some really cool heavy riffs. Halford breaking into the screaming falsettos during the really slow break section. Just awesome. I was hooked immediately.
So you said you've heard The Ripper a lot.
Yes. And I don't remember where, on a playlist that I built one time or something. I'm sure I put, I'm familiar with The Ripper for whatever reason. And I don't remember why. Just a cool chugging heavy riff about frickin' Jack the Ripper. Yeah, it's almost... And same with the first song, actually, almost classical sounding guitar playing. I don't know how to explain it. Like, they're playing in harmony with each other sometimes, and it's like running up and down the scale. I don't know. Never Turn Your Back on the Ripper. And, you know, a song about Jack the Ripper from the perspective of Jack the Ripper.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pretty fucking metal by itself.
Speaking of incredibly metal, the next track, Dream Deceiver. One thing that I love so much about the new wave of British heavy metal is even when a track slows down, like, there's so much to hear. And I don't just mean the instrumentation, but the lyrics and storytelling are almost like modern oral history, you know, just like these tales of past, present, sometimes future. And I'm just all in, you know, like you said, telling a story in the last track from the perspective of Jack the Ripper. Like, that's frightening.
Yeah, it is. And all the bands today are going to have songs like that where you're like, okay, what is the actual perspective on this song? What are we talking about? And then when you look at it, you're like, oh, wow, okay, interesting. And I do appreciate that. That is one thing I appreciate about metal music. They tell some stories and say some things that, you know, you don't really get to experience other places.
Yeah.
Let me say one more thing again about Rob Halford's voice. I mean, his range is so crazy on that song. He's all over this. You know, his voice is just crazy, and it's got this big scream outro at the end. Yeah. Man, so great.
Yeah, the transition into Deceiver.
Yes, it's just a big scream, and then you come in with Deceiver is just this chugging heavy song that's just like really chugging along. Really sweet.
Yeah, it's such a cool little counterpoint.
So that's the final track on side A, which is super weird, because the first track on side B is Prelude, which that sounds like it should be the first song on the album. Yeah. The weird thing is, on my album, on the back, it lists the song order as Prelude, and then into the B side here, and then goes into the A side.
Oh, that's weird.
Which is super weird. But on the disc itself, side A is what we just talked about, so it's weird. So anyway, Prelude.
I guess maybe just a misprint, and they were like,
I don't know, dude. I feel like that maybe is. Yeah, I honestly feel like that's it, because on the disc, you know, side A is what we just talked about. But
I just picture some studio exec like, send it. These metalheads won't notice.
So it's true. I didn't notice until I was looking at it. All right. So, and then it just jumps into Tyrant. Yeah. I don't have much to say about Prelude. But yeah, Tyrant was pretty cool.
It was, man. I really liked Halford's voice on this. And then there's like the double tracking vocals. Like, man, I was pumping my fists.
And that one's got so many different parts and tempo changes. It keeps you on your toes the whole time. There's all these different things going on. It's got a kick-ass solo. Here's one thing I learned this week. And I didn't think it was true. But it turns out I'm a guitar solo guy. And this week was so full of sick guitar solos. Like, it was a great week for me. I was loving it. Great, great guitar solos, great bass, crazy vocals. This was a great week for me. I got one little story about guitar solos. We'll talk about it at the end. I don't want to interrupt our little talk here. Unless you want me to Bring it on. I mean, I can tell you.
I mean, if it fits here, great. If not, sure, yeah, wherever you want to, man.
Let's throw it in. So I remember watching a documentary on the new wave of British heavy metal one time. And apparently there was like this club where they would play this music and people would show up with like wooden fake guitars or like that they'd made. And they would just like air guitar to new wave of British heavy metal music, like in these clubs. And they have like competitions and stuff. Like they bring these like cardboard cutout guitars. Like that was me this week. I was sitting there in the basement, just like shredding, like,
all right, 2021. Let's bring back cardboard and wooden guitars to shows.
I mean, those dudes, they were serious. And I don't blame it. It was cool. I mean, all this stuff is so cool, but
yeah.
Anyway, I digress. I didn't mean to take us down a weird little tangent, but
no, yeah, it's pretty cool because, you know, like we were saying earlier with metal, it's just so fearlessly itself.
Exactly. And, like,
the confidence it takes to you know, lug around a 2x4.
It was so funny, dude. Like, for the documentary, they had like shots of like people showing up to this thing, like walking down the street carrying a fucking piece of cardboard that they had like glued to make it stiff. Like, and they're just like themselves, totally themselves. Jean jacket on, patches all over it, freaking beat up white shoes, just walking in. Hey, you know, I'm coming here to kick some ass, have some fun. That's what it's all about. So anyway, back into it here. How about track 7, Genocide?
This is yet another thing I love about metal music. Like, they just take on these topics that really outside of punk and I mean, hip hop in the 80s and 90s as well, that, well, most genres are just afraid to take on, and like not trying to wrap it in metaphors or anything. Like, no, some things just need to be talked about and discussed and brutally, in a brutally honest and aggressive manner. And that's what they do here with Genocide. And I mean, who was talking about genocide in 1976?
It's crazy. And even Rob Halford himself kind of said that he hoped that the song's like strong graphic lyrics would be, quoting him here, provocative and somewhat controversial, and mm-hmm. to stimulate people. You know, he's wanting them to think about this stuff. So it's interesting. Kind of Deep Purple-y, honestly, because that was the other thing I found interesting about this one. It's kind of, like we said, this is the oldest album we're going to listen to this week. This track kind of felt like an in-between track, in between where metal music was and where it was kind of going.
Yeah, it was the Lucy of metal music. It's the missing link.
Yeah, the whole album is kind of like, you can, because it's not the same as the ones we listen to the rest of the week.
Yeah.
But it still got all the pieces. Chugging along, galloping kind of bass lines, really sick guitar solos, cool vocals, but it's just not quite the same. So,
sure.
Anyway, anything else? Last track on the album here, Island of Domination.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad closer, but I don't have much.
I don't have much else either. Cool song. The whole album was awesome. Nice. So, any final thoughts on Sad Wings of Destiny here?
No, I mean, it's always fun to get close to the origin, and I'm pumped to get even closer now.
Yeah, it was a hoot. The album was a hoot. Great riffs, variety, some slow tunes, slower tunes in there.
Mm-hmm.
Great vocals. So moving along here, 1982 now. We're going to talk about Judas Priest's 8th studio album. So we're a little ways down the road from what I say Sad Wings was, so their 2nd. So
yeah.
6 albums down the line. Screaming for Vengeance. This one came out July 17, 1982 on Columbia Records. This is their commercial breakthrough, double platinum, monster album. Let me say one thing here real quick about one of the coolest album covers I've ever seen. I love this album cover.
Yeah. Yeah, tell us about it.
It's got like a metal fanged eagle like swooping down from the left and like kind of rising sun background with a yellow background outside of that. It's badass. And the eagle has fangs, which not really possible. Birds don't have teeth, but it is what it is.
It's pretty freaking cool. It makes me, I bet a lot of people try to get this tattooed in the early 80s. And I bet there are a lot of shitty Screaming for Vengeance tattoos floating around on some boomers right now.
Bet so too, man. I'd like to see some. I'm gonna Google that when we're done because I want to see some real can I Google crappy Screaming for Vengeance tattoos and see what it gives me? Anyway.
I mean, I imagine if you just do Screaming for Vengeance Tattoo. Wow, there's some actually really good ones so far. Surely I'm going to find one that's garbage, but...
While you're looking, I'm going to tell the people where I got this album. This one came from Sisters of Sound Records in Manhattan, Kansas, which is where I spent a big chunk of my life, so I've got quite a few albums from there.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, they were featured on that Vinyl Record Store a Day website at one point, I think.
Nice. Last time I was in there, they kind of priced themselves out of my range. Everything was super expensive in there. I was just like, man, I can't tell people to come here when you got this album in here for like $18 when I've seen other places for like $10. I can't tell my friends to go there anymore. It sucks. God.
Yeah, there is this flea market or antique place in Charlotte where they have vinyl section, and the vinyl is actually pretty good, but the prices that they put stuff out for, I swear to God, if I went there today, I would see the same stuff that I saw when I went there the last time. It was like a year and a half ago, because a lot of that stuff was what I saw the last time I went there, like 2 years before then. And
yeah,
it's like, nobody's going to buy this. Like, it's a great album, but no, nobody's going to pay $25 for a Rumors album where like the cover's a little faded and bent.
Dude, same. Yeah. I actually bought something from Sisters of Sound one time because I'd seen it in there for a year. And I was just like, you know what? Tired of looking at this thing. I'm going to buy it. It was Sleep. It was
okay.
God, whatever the Sleep album is, I have is, but, yeah, couldn't take looking at it anymore. It was super expensive, but I was in, every time I'd go in there, I'd see it. I was just like, you know what? I'm getting this thing out of here.
Give this thing so, a good home.
Yep, yeah, it's coming home with me. We're going to listen to one long song.
Oh, man.
That's basically what Sleep is. All right, so if you want to know where I got the one we just talked about, Sad Wings of Destiny, that's another Black Hills Vinyl one. Just
oh,
FYI.
Awesome. That balances out Camel.
Very much so. Yeah, very much so. You said you were much more familiar with Screaming for Vengeance. How familiar were you?
Pretty familiar. Yeah, I've listened to this one quite a bit. Even though I don't own it, I have a digital copy, but I don't have an actual physical copy.
So let's dive in here, buddy. Track one, the Hellion. So kind of an intro, instrumental intro to Electric Eye, which is track two here. I think this would make pretty good wrestling entrance music.
Man... this is
Oh,
it is such a good opener.
Like, yes,
can you just imagine like the lights in the arena go down and then boom,
yes, and come slamming in, oh, I come walking God. out,
yeah,
three step,
yeah. Great. I mean, you describe it better than me. Yeah,
that's the intro, and I'm familiar with Screaming for Vengeance. There's a reason I bought it, but it'd been a while, and as soon as that hit, I was like, yep, let's go. Let's go. And I was listening to this pretty late in the night, which maybe isn't the best time to listen to this kind of music. But as soon as it came on, I was like, all right, I'm in. I'm hooked. Let's go. We're in the zone. Then Electric Eye comes in, which...
oh, my God.
What a song. What a song. Love the lyrics. Fuck the surveillance state. Like, my tearless retina takes pictures that can move. What a sick song. And it just destroys. It's so
it's fucking powerful, man. Like...
yeah,
the vocal effects and techniques are rad, but like, good Lord, everything about this track just slays. Like, the rhythm section is just a force of nature. The guitar solo is perfect. The bridge with the rhythm guitar is solid. And then Halford's voice is like better than it has ever been eight albums in.
It's terrific. It's my, the only thing I wrote is what a song. Because yeah. It's just a tremendous song. It's got everything. Like you said, it's got everything I like. It's got great rhythm section. The drums are just slamming along here. The guitars are epic. The vocals are incredible. And then the lyrical content, he's singing about like a surveillance state, like constantly being watched. It's so crazy. And I'm in.
Yep.
So good. Got nothing else to say about Electric Eye. It probably should be my song of the week, but I've got another one picked out for that.
Okay. I'm trying to think which one it might be. I had a couple close ones. One was, my pick is very obvious this week, but...
I've got a surprise song of the week this week.
Ooh, okay.
Anyway, Electric Eye ends. I'm smiling from ear to ear. Riding on the Wind comes in, which... Got a drum intro. A lot of these songs are guitar intros. This one's a cool little drum intro with some sick guitar. Let's see. What else you got on side A? I got Bloodstone. You got anything Bloodstone to say?
I don't really have anything on the next two other than like the production on this album was impeccable.
Bloodstone is another one that kind of reminded me of like a Deep Purple song. So that's two so far from Judas Priest that made me think of Deep Purple, which makes sense. I mean, that's old wave of British heavy metal. This is the new wave. So it would make sense that they've got those influences for sure.
Yeah.
All right. And then the final track on side A, Pain and Pleasure.
Oh, I forgot this is, on side A. I really like this one.
Yeah. It's kind of a marching monster of a song. Really... Mm-hmm. Just monstrous. It just slamming in.
It's heavy footed. Like it's like dragging an anchor behind it. It's just so heavy. It kicks loads of ass. Like, oh.
It does indeed. It does indeed. I didn't write much because I was like hooked. I was like, this is just slamming. So
And of course, like the song title, it made me think of Sum 41 because they have that bonus track on A Killer No Filler. Called Pain for Pleasure. And then, of course, Sum 41 referenced Judas Priest in probably their biggest song, Fat Lip, which I can probably still sing every word to this day, even without the music or the lyrics in front of me.
So that album, All Killer, No Filler, is probably the album on earth that I would know the highest percentage of lyrics off of. If you just like were like, all right, how many lyrics do you know on this album? That would probably be number one for me.
Still. That's incredible. It's
and I haven't heard so it in catchy. Like 12 years.
Yeah. I can't think of the last time I've listened to Sum 41, and I know as soon as I like with Fat Lip, as soon as I would hear, yeah,
great.
Next
stuff. I'm also influenced by Iron Maiden and Judas Priest. Sum 41. Thank you. Let's see. Title track kicks off side B, Screaming for Vengeance, and this one comes in screaming literally. There's just a big it just comes like a freight train just roaring in. It's so fast. The solo is insane on this one. It's Shred City.
It's a battle royale of a track, like very close to my song of the week.
It's got all the parts. It's got everything you'd want. His voice doesn't sound real. Like, it's so crazy how good Rob Halford's voice is. He's just wailing on the outro. But anyway, so cruising along here. I can't stop talking about it because it just blows my mind. Like, that's the one thing I got from Judas Priest is Rob Halford's voice. He's got the pipes. He's just destroying. Track 8, You've Got Another Thing Coming. There you go. People are going to know this one.
Let me tell you how good this album is, listener. This is probably their most famous song. This is one of the weakest tracks on the album. And it's still really good, but I would put it in the bottom third.
I would too. And I think the funny thing about that is Judas Priest would agree with you. They didn't think it would be
really?
A hit. Yeah, they didn't think it would be a hit when they put it out. They just thought it was kind of filler.
Yeah, It gets deep.
Did you know there is a Pat Boone cover of this? I did not.
I wonder if he dressed up like Rob Halford.
One could hope. That's incredible. Yeah, my reaction when I found that out was the same as yours. So, yeah.
I know exactly what I am going to be listening to as soon as we hang up here.
Can you just hear Pat Boone crooning this baby out? Like, I love it.
That's amazing.
It's terrific.
I would love to know the backstory of how that came to be.
I don't know. I wonder if could we be lucky enough that Pat Boone has a full metal covers album like Pat Boone does metal? Please be true. Hold on. I'm just kidding, man. But wouldn't that be amazing? I would listen to that.
In a metal mood, No More Mr. Nice Guy is a 1997 album by Pat Boone in which Pat Boone covers hard rock and heavy metal songs.
Yes! Yes!
Judas Priest, Deep Purple, AC/DC, Van Halen, Alice Cooper, Nazareth, Metallica, Dio, Guns N' Roses, Paradise City, Jimi Hendrix, Ozzy Osbourne, and Led Zeppelin. Wow.
I bet it's so
the cover
bad.
For it is awesome.
Is that... What font is that? It looks like a...
It's like a wanted poster.
Oh my god. Yeah, we're listening to this. I know I said I wasn't gonna I know I said I wasn't gonna buy any albums until we were done, but I'm gonna buy this. we're gonna listen to this.
It's gonna be a bonus track, very last episode. Yeah.
All right. Oh so, my god. Okay. Sorry to take us off track with Pat Boone, but I thought that was incredible. I had to share that. So on the Devil's Child, I definitely have some notes on that bad boy. What do you got?
Smash and grab it. All I had. Build my funeral pyre. Man, what a great set of metal lines.
It's wonderful. It was a left me feeling good. For the last track on the album, the bass was chugging along. Let's see. So damn wicked, you got me by the throat. Like, yes.
Yeah, man.
Really fun. Really fun album. Final thoughts on this one or Judas Priest in general?
It's a metal classic. I don't know why I don't own this. Yeah, I need to remedy that.
The whole thing was a hoot. I love both of these albums. I do have one fun factoid I forgot to share earlier. So let's go back to Sad Wings of Destiny real quick. So I've got a superhero origin story here for you. This is Dave Mustaine of Megadeth relating He has said that his brother-in-law punched him in the face for listening to Sad Wings of Destiny. He called it a turning point where he chose heavy metal as a career as revenge against his brother-in-law.
That's incredible. What a way to freaking start a career.
I love it. My brother-in-law punched me in the face, and so I decided to become one of the biggest rockers of all time to shove it in his face.
I wonder what his brother wanted him to listen to.
I don't know, but that's an incredible origin story. Anyway, I had to share that. I forgot it was buried in my notes on the first album. But
good on you, Dave.
Yeah, way to go. You didn't have anything else to say about Judas Priest, neither do I. It was tremendous. No. A lot of fun. Yep. So the next band we're going to talk about is another one from the same era. This one's actually a little bit later. This band is Saxon. The album is Denim and Leather. This is Saxon's fourth studio album. Came out in 1981.
I had me a good old time. I was familiar with this. I wasn't familiar with the next one we're going to listen to, but I was familiar with Denim and Leather.
Princess of the Night is track one. What do you got for that one?
Like, I just can't imagine how fun this would have been live. Like, I would have lost my mind. Like, I don't know how Biff Byford's.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Biff Byford's vocals are just so good. Yeah. I don't know, man.
It's a cool song too. So another thing we've already kind of talked about is lyrically what heavy metal tracks are, what they do. I mean, this is a song about a steam locomotive. And it's kind of got that, like it's got a sweet little guitar riff. The groove is super sick. The solo is awesome. It's a scorcher. It's really fun. Great lead-off track for the album. Absolutely a great track to kick it off with.
Yeah, and then Never Surrender. Like, the only way I can describe Never Surrender is that every band that came after and had a sound like this, hopefully they gave some credit and residuals to Saxon, because it is such an imprint and iconic sound.
Yeah, I had similar thoughts. I mean, his voice is not quite as crazy as Rob Halford's, but it's definitely a good, solid metal voice. That's another song with just an absolute shred solo. Like, they got the formula down at this point. They're like, all right, this is how this kind of music is going to work. And it works really, really well. Super fun chorus to Never Surrender. I can't remember how it goes, but they're just screaming Never Surrender. Like, sick.
Yeah, yeah.
Out of Control. Another scorcher.
Yeah, man, it's just a fun track. Like, if I didn't know they were British, I would have guessed they created the LA glam metal scene, which, I mean, dude, they did, but, like, actually being from there.
It's so funny you say that, because I said in my notes that this reminds me of some early Van Halen.
Yeah. Like,
totally. Totally got why you said that. It's because it does kind of have that vibe, but it still kicks a lot of ass. It's definitely a scorcher. The solo on that one is incredible. I give the advantage to solos to Saxon up to this point, because Saxon's freaking guitars are amazing.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving along here, Play It Loud.
I love the line, don't call a doctor, turn up the sound. It's just, oh man, it just captures that spirit so well of, like, we're a metal band, we're loud, your neighbors are going to hear us.
Dude, so that's funny you say that, because myself, this week, and probably actually for some reason this album in particular, I played louder than anything I had listened to so far. Like, I had it cranked this week for this, all six of these, but this album in particular, for whatever reason, I was like, I'm just gonna bust this out. So
it warrants it, man.
Yeah. Anyway, jumping into side B and the bands played on. You sent me a live video of this. This was pretty sick. So let's talk about it.
I'm trying to gather my thoughts. Yeah. What do you think?
Let me tell you just real quick. So, and the bands played on. This song is about the 1980 Monsters of Rock Music Festival.
Okay.
They talk about a couple.
So it's actually about the festival itself.
It's about the festival.
That's cool. Okay.
It talks about a couple other acts in there that mentions Rainbow at one point.
Yep.
Great intro. It comes in hot right off the bat. Mm-hmm. So real quick, if you're curious, 1980 Monsters of Rock, August 16th. You want to know who else was there?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Rainbow, Judas Priest, The Scorpions, April Wine, Saxon, Riot, and Touch. I don't know the last two, but the other ones I do.
That's where did this take place?
Castle Donington, England is where it's held.
Okay. Bring it back. Is it still going on?
Every year from 1980 to 1996, and then they had one in 2006, and that's it.
Wasn't there one that was in
Moscow?
Moscow.
That's one of the craziest concerts I've ever watched.
Okay, yeah, that's the one where... Is that the one
people showed up.
Yeah.
It's like the highest attended event ever. Yeah.
Yeah, and like Metallica was there, and you just yes. They show the camera behind Metallica, and it's just like a sea. It's at an
airfield. Yeah. They're like, I don't remember, Tsushima or something like that, airfield, and outside of Moscow, you can just Google Monsters of Rock Moscow Metallica, and you'll see some pretty crazy shit. I mean, you got like the Soviet dressed up military guys like standing there watching, and you got these other people just going bonkers in the crowd. It's a pretty good concert.
Unofficially 1.5 million people. That's almost the entire state of West Virginia.
It's crazy, man. Anyway, that's a God. Cool concert. I'm sure this one was cool. I don't know. Back to the Saxon here. Go ahead. What do you got?
I just love the song. Like,
yeah,
it's a common theme for me this week, but yeah, having a great time while listening to a bunch of bands you really like, apparently. Like, God.
I bet this is a crowd favorite. I bet people like this one a lot. I bet they, you know, they play this at shows, I'm sure, and I bet it goes over really well.
Oh, yeah.
Track 7, Midnight Rider. I have an interesting note on that. So it's a song about a tour they did of the U.S. Them being British. I don't know how accurate the places and things like that are. But my note on this is this. It sounds like a Rush song at times to me.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's just such a random shout out to places in the U.S.
It's different than all the other songs on the album, for sure. The funny thing, so I put in my notes, it's reminded me of a Rush song at times. The tour that they're referencing in the lyrics was actually with Rush. They toured with Rush for a few dates. So
nice.
That was kind of funny. And then the final track on the album, Denim and Leather.
Yes.
Oh, hell yeah.
Denim and Leather.
Brought us all together.
Yes. Yes. It was you that set the spirit free. Oh, man, just
so good. I love this track. The rhythm section leads this one off. That's always going to get me into it. Really slamming away. The song itself is inspired, maybe this is why we like it, by like the popular attire of the metalheads of the day. But really, it's about the community of metal. And it feels so good listening to it. It is a great song.
Yeah, one thing that... It kind of makes sense now after you mentioned that about what In the Band Played On is about. They are just so open and appreciative. Like, this is about the metal community and the bands played on about the metal show Midnight Rider about places in the U.S. they really enjoy. It's, mm-hmm. I just love how they aren't afraid to just tell people what they like and show their appreciation. That's just, it's so cool. And like, what a way to build a fan base and community around what you're doing.
They love what they're doing. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you read the music paper from the back and to the front? Did you find out where to see your favorite band? Did you listen to the radio every Friday night? Did you hang around your local record store? They know who their fans are.
Yeah.
They're shouting out to them, you know, thank you for being cool fans. I'm glad we could be brought together by this thing that unites us all. It's super cool.
It's like they were speaking to me a few years before I was born.
Yeah. It would have been super fun to be a part of this scene.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Just to be in that area at this time. Yeah. It was super fun album. That's the last track on the album.
I would love to track down old metalheads from that era. To
see the cardboard guitars.
Yeah.
Super fun. Really fun album. I listened to it very loudly. That's it.
Yeah, man. This album fucking ruled.
Hey, everyone. Jay here.
And Joey.
We're having a lot of fun doing this, and we're grateful to everyone who's tuned in so far. As the podcast grows, we hope to keep everything as independent as possible.
Which is why we've created a Buy Me a Coffee campaign.
Buy Me a Coffee is a great way to support us for as little as $1 or $4 per month, or $40 per year. We're still coming up with bonuses and perks, but we hope you'll consider supporting us while we iron out those things.
Interested in being the oil to this machine? You can find us at buymeacoffee.com/Jay and Joey or find the link in the show notes.
Thanks, everyone, and enjoy the show.
Thank you all.
Cruising along with another Saxon here. The next one up is Crusader. This is Saxon's sixth studio album. This one came out in 1984. So a little bit later down the line, this is the oldest one we're going to listen to this week. What do you got about Crusader? Actually, let me tell you how they came up with the name Crusader. In England, there is a paper called the Daily Express. And at the logo at the top, there is a picture of a Crusader. And they always really like that for whatever reason. And then there was a car called the Ford Cortina Crusader. Somebody just mentioned that to one of them. They said they liked the name. They had no connotations, didn't care about the history of it, liked the name and said, we're going to write an album called Crusader. So
nice.
They just picked the name and then built the album around that.
It makes sense that they didn't have too much of a focus. I mean, this wasn't a bad album by any means, but I went in expecting some kind of thematic elements to it and it did not. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, outside of a couple tracks, it really did not. Yeah. So one interesting thing I'll mention here, my version of Crusader here is in a totally different order than the standard Crusader that you'll see out there. The weird part is there's no songs that are different. They're just in a completely different order, which is super annoying when Joey and I are trying to come together on what we're talking about here. So
do you know if this was from a different country?
I don't. I haven't really looked. I don't even know where this came from. Oh, hold on. I do. Backtrack Records in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Okay. Maybe it's the special Nebraska version.
Yeah, I don't know. And Denim and Leather came from a record store here in Colorado.
Okay.
I think we should probably talk about it in the order that you listen to them because that makes the most sense.
Okay. So yeah, what'd you think of Crusader? Just a little intro, setting the tone.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just... You know, some horses galloping, some men screaming. Battle has commenced. Jumps into Crusader, which I love the intro to Crusader. I don't know, what'd you think of Crusader here?
I didn't mind that acoustic into the bum, bum, bum. Like the first voice you hear is just really something else. It's like, who dares battle?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's supposed to be like the... leader of the, you know, the, I guess the people that are in the region, the Saracens at the time, you know, he's calling out to the Crusaders. Who's showing up on my doorstep? What do you got? Really slams
come
away.
Crusader, let the battle commence. Yeah. It's, I mean, it shreds.
Yeah. Is this the one, tell me if I'm wrong. Is this the bass line that's pretty much just do, that's pretty much all it does the whole time. I mean, it's effective. I'm in. I'm always hooked by just a little bass riff. It rips. It's another ripper of a song. The solo is awesome, which, again, in my notes, I said, I guess I'm a solo guy now. Yeah, musically, it's about the Crusades from the, I guess the perspective of the Crusaders themselves.
Then it goes into a little bit of what you fancy, which...
Track of the week.
Really? Jay's
track of the week. Dude, I loved it. I don't know if you did or not. I loved this song. Wild ass intro.
Yeah.
Into just a ripper of a song. I love this song. It's the chorus. Like, they got a harmonized chorus where it's just like, a little bit of what you fancy always does you good. And it almost, it's like a, got like some almost Queen sounding vocals because they're like harmonizing. Oh my God. What a riot. I love this track. I don't know why I love this track, but I loved it. Just a ripper. Yeah. Really nice. Fun. That's my surprise track of the week. And it that probably
was, yeah.
It probably isn't my favorite, but is the one that surprised me the most. Because as soon as it came on, I was like, what is this? And then I was like, oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. I was not expecting that at all. Yeah. So caught me off guard there. The next one is one that you are familiar with for sure. Set Me Free.
Yeah, it's a sweet cover and what a cool song. In my notes, I wrote, give me that sweet, sweet cover. The solo is crazy and I knew it would be. Like, I knew it was going to be a crazy ass solo. It's just a rocket train of a track. What a cool song. I think they did it justice for sure.
Absolutely. And I think they really did a good job of showcasing how strong Sweet were, like how good they were as musicians and
for sure.
What they were really pioneering.
Yeah, I'm glad to see him kind of pay homage to be like, yeah, this is, check this out. That's a good song.
It was so unexpected. Just Let Me Rock.
Just Let Me Rock.
Yeah, it's built for the arena.
It's you're right. It's got a big old chorus. It's definitely an arena track for sure.
What is that? What your version ended with?
No, mine ended with Run for Your Lives.
Okay, so that's we had the same end. Okay,
I didn't have much to say about Run for Your Lives. There was almost a surf rock quality to that one at times.
Yeah, it was oddly experimental. Yeah, but fitting end.
Yeah. So, what you got? Any final thoughts on Saxon? I had a really good time with Saxon. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Sure.
It wasn't classic new wave of British heavy metal Saxon, but it was still really, really good. Still had a fun time. A little bit of What You Fancy. Check it out. Man. It's a good song. And then finally, I think it's pretty fitting we're going to end with this band because they're, I don't know, would you say they're the most well-known at this point in time as far as new wave of British heavy metal bands go?
I would, yeah.
Yeah, me too. So it's Iron Maiden.
You told me a little story about how you got these records. So before we even get into what they are, let's talk about that.
Yeah, these two albums, we've got The Number of the Beast. It's their third studio album. Came out March 22nd, 1982. But this one and the other one, how did I get them? They were both gifts from my dad. And this is the story as I recall at this point. My dad was in a record store in New Jersey. Princeton Records, I think, in Princeton, New Jersey.
Wow, okay.
So he's in there and either, I can't remember exactly, so either he met a guy coming in who was selling these or there was somebody at the counter in the process of trying to sell these. And that's where he snagged them. And he said there was a whole stack of them and I was so ticked off. I was like, dude, you got me two.
Where's the rest of the stack?
Yeah. He got a hell of a deal on him from what I understand. And that's, my dad is Mr. Deals. Like, he is all about getting the deal. So I'm sure he got a good deal on him or else he wouldn't have bought him. But they are in absolutely pristine condition too. It's incredible how nice these albums are. I can't believe it. It's hard to find stuff like this.
And these are original pressings.
They are, yes.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
More on that later.
I love it, but I'm jealous at the same time. Was this a common practice? Like... Or did he just catch a wild hair and is like,
oh,
you
no.
know what? Okay.
No, definitely not the first time my dad has either sold something to or purchased something from somebody who was, you know, out front of a store. I remember one time we were at like at a mall in, God, where were we? Springfield, Massachusetts, I think. And it was a baseball card like big baseball card sale thing going on, and we're walking out in the parking lot and there's this older gal pushing a cart full of just boxes of cards. And he asked her, he said, what do you know, are you selling these cards today? Are you part of the display? She's like, no, these are my, you know, my husband's cars. He's no longer with us. I just want to get rid of them, or something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. And my dad just is like, all right, I'll give you a you know, $50 for the whole thing. And sure enough, we took them. That was it.
Nice. So, I wonder if there was anything worthwhile in there.
I'm sure there was. I still have them somewhere. I'm sure we can find them.
Nice.
Anyway, so that's where these came from. Thank you, Father. They are phenomenal, and yeah. I appreciate it greatly.
Good call, Dad Jensen.
Yes. Yeah, I have a standing order out there with him. Anytime he's in a record store and he sees a deal on something like this, Saxon, Iron Maiden, something, just pick it up. I'll pay you whatever, you know, whatever I owe awesome. You.
Cool, man. So,
anyway, Number of the Beast. Like I said, March 22nd, 1982 on EMI Records. This is their first album to feature Bruce Dickinson on lead vocals. So third album, but first to feature Bruce Dickinson. This album was strongly opposed by social conservatives in the United States. Iron Maiden was accused of being Satanist, the Number of the Beast. There were public burnings of their albums by religious groups. Some of them smashed their albums with hammers for fear of inhaling the burning vinyl fumes. The actual tour was subject to lots of boycotts and demonstrations. Sometimes venues were surrounded by activists trying to keep people out. Pretty wild for an album that I absolutely adore.
Anyone out there who knows me knows how I feel about this. It's one of my favorite albums of all time by one of my favorite bands of all time. One of the only times I've almost cried tears of joy at a concert. Like, this album makes me so fucking happy.
You've seen them in concert?
Yes. Yeah, and Alice Cooper opened.
I'm super jealous.
Yeah, it
not
was
not so much about the Alice Cooper, but the Iron Maiden. Absolutely jealous.
June 2012, Charlotte, North Carolina. Almost 10 years at this point. Damn. But man,
that's one of my notes. I bet they are an absolute riot to see in person.
It was unbelievable. And in the crowd work, there's like 14, 15,000 people there. There's no reason for Bruce Dickinson to be that good with crowd work and to be like singling people out and chit-chatting with them. And he does it because, you know, he loves the fans and they respect the fans. And I had a rip-roaring good time.
Let's jump on in here. Kicking off with Invaders, which is just comes, again, ripping in a song about Viking invaders.
I love how at the very beginning, there's just this brief moment of silence. And then,
yes,
pow, like everything is just an absolute rush.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I'll probably say this a lot. Steve Harris, the bass player for Iron Maiden, is an absolute bass god. This whole album, the next album, it just, I can't believe he plays all this with mostly two fingers. He's like a two-finger bass guy. It's so great.
Yeah, he's an old-school finger pick, dude. So no lie, my third bullet point on this is Steve Harris is the greatest bassist of all time. I'm saying
he is. I think
he legitimately is, yeah.
So this song lyrically is one that definitely grabbed me. And the lyrics are super dark. They're so fun. You've got, let's see, the lyrics on the last verse. Axes grind and maces clash as wounded fighters fall to the ground. Severed limbs and fatal woundings, bloody corpses lay all around. The smell of death and burning flesh, the battle-weary fight to the end. The Saxons have overpowered victims of the mighty Norsemen, or the Saxons have been overpowered victims of the mighty Norsemen, excuse me. But
I wonder how Saxons felt about that.
That's so dark. Like, they're just like people getting chopped up, there's corpses around, there's burning flesh. But by the same time, that kind of lyrical content where they're singing about something historic, it's kind of an escape from reality a little bit. That's another thing I like about metal. Just fun, just such a fun song. Children of the Damned, epic to the absolute extreme.
Yeah.
What a crazy song.
It's an incredible build-up. I love singing along to this song. Just the transition as the pace and the tempo starts to pick up. Like, it just gets me so psyched. Like, I get chills.
Yeah, when he repeats the song title three times at the end of each of the verses, you just can't help but just want to, like, scream along with Bruce. His voice is terrific. Bruce Dickinson's voice is incredible. When they really pick up the pace and speed it up, the bass is just so, so fast. I can't believe a person could play that fast on the bass guitar. Just a crazy, crazy great song. I love that song. So, anyway, The Prisoner is track 3.
Yeah. So they played this when I saw them. It was the third song they played. And you know those videos of fans fainting, like when they saw the Beatles at airports and stuff? Like, that was almost me. Like, there's a killer rhythm section, then guitars are knife-like, and just 14,000 people singing, "Not a prisoner, I'm a free man." Like,
spoken word clip in the intro. Do you know what that's from? Is it from anything, or did they just like do that for the album?
It is from a TV show, and it might have been called The Prisoner. I know this. There's a 99% Invisible where they reference it.
Sounded familiar, but I couldn't quite place it, so I was curious. Let's see. Track 4 is Acacia Avenue.
That is a brutal song.
Totally. Musically, it's phenomenal. Lyrically, yeah. I was like, oh, holy crap.
It's rough. And I think it's, you know, it's meant to portray like how rough and slimy and gritty industrial England was, and just like how little human life was valued.
Yeah, for sure. And it definitely seems like it. I mean, lyrics are brutal, but I don't think that it's written to be taken like this is, I don't know. It's not Iron Maiden. It's a character, really. Mm-hmm. You know, all the terrible things that are being said and that sort of stuff. It's a character, just like with, you know, the Ripper from, you know, Jack the Ripper. So they're not like promoting it. It's just, it's a perspective that people don't talk about in music a lot. So here it is. And it's cool.
Yeah, man.
Side B, The Number of the Beast, kicks off with that crazy spoken word. What is that? Is that a Bible verse? The spoken word? I can't. Is that the actual from the book of Revelations where they're talking about the number of the beast?
Yeah. It is. It's Vincent Price. Yeah. So they're talking. It's Vincent Price. Oh yeah. It's Revelation 12:12 and Revelations a little later in the. So yeah, they pull a couple of verses from the book of Revelation.
That's what I thought, but I wasn't 100% sure. And then it just comes in with the sick guitar riff. And then just, yes, so massive. The screaming intro then at that point. Huge drums.
Yeah, man.
It's just an unstoppable monster. It's another one that's just so fast and so perfect. Crazy ass bass playing, crazy solo.
I mean, I can see why this scared dumbass evangelical Reagan America, which makes me love it even more. I mean, it's an iconic track. Like, what can be said?
If somebody asked me, you know, what is Iron Maiden? I've never heard of Iron Maiden. Play me some Iron Maiden. I might them. I'd probably play them this. This might be the one I would pick.
It would be this one or the next one.
Yes.
Yeah.
The next one is definitely my wife's favorite Iron Maiden song. She absolutely loves it. Run to the Hills is track 6 here. Just an absolute classic. The galloping bass, once again, Steve Harris's bass playing, but it's so great. It's perfect as a perfectly galloping horse bass line, super fast. What do you got on Run to the Hills? Like, I have a couple more things to say about it, but
yeah, this B-side is just unbelievable. This is the track after The Number of the Beast. Something actually discussed the horrors of American colonialism and expansion when it still wasn't being talked about. Like, it wasn't in vogue to discuss these things. Like, I can't even describe what it's like when the crowd sings this.
It's interesting to see a British take on a real stain on American history. Yeah. Not that the Brits don't have plenty of stains on their own history. I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah.
A lot of countries out there like that. But it wasn't talked about. It's still not really talked about how poorly, you know, the native peoples of North America were treated. And it's interesting to see it in song.
So antithetical to what so many stories and so much discussion was going on at that time period of, you know, exploding American exceptionalism and, you know, manifest destiny, trickle down bullshit. And it's an all-time great song, period, for not just metal song, but songs.
Yeah, and it's another one that really, really features Bruce Dickinson's voice. He hits some crazy notes in this song. When he says, run for your life a couple times, the life is so high. I'm not even going to attempt it, but it's...
Life!
There you go. Let's see, Gangland, track 7.
Yeah, I don't have too much. I do like the song. I just think it's a perfect break between the previous track and then this track.
Yeah, I'm happy to know that you've seen them, because my note for this is it's also terrifically fast and awesome. I love it. They never slow it down. And my note is, I bet their shows are so fun, but also extremely exhausting. I bet you're worn out by the end of this.
Yeah, you absolutely. And they only play, I think they played like 16, 17 songs. And I mean, a lot of them are fairly long. So, I mean, it's just a couple hours, but I mean, you feel like you've run a marathon. And especially when you're with your people and you feel safe to let it all out.
Just get wild at Iron Maiden. I'm with you. Track 8, Hallowed Be Thy Name.
Jesus.
What a cool track. It comes in like it's super ominous kind of at the beginning. And then you got like, once again, the chugging bass line with the guitar over the top. It kind of, it's almost got a video game riff. And I don't know how to explain it. It reminded me of Mega Man for the 8-bit Nintendo, which best music 8-bit Nintendo Mega Man by far. But what do you got? What do you got?
I
never
made that connection, but I get it. Yeah. Because a lot of that old Nintendo music was a little metal-y.
It was.
Especially songs like, or games like Super Ghouls and Ghosts, or Ghouls and Ghosts, that's what it was called. Yeah, so this is one of my favorite songs of all time. Like, hard stop. I have a hard time just expressing how much I love this. Like you said, that opening is just so sinister and mysterious. As soon as the tempo changes, like, I'm in another world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Tears fall, but what am I crying after? Oh, I'm not afraid of dying. Don't I believe that there never is an end? Like, what a badass way. When your time comes and you're just, oh, my destiny of death is right in front of me, but I'm not afraid of it. Yet I feel fear. It's incredible.
It is. It's a great track to end the album on. I mean it's phenomenal. The whole album was phenomenal. I don't have anything else to say about it. It's just super fun. I had a blast listening to this.
So, quick question.
Mm-hmm.
At 5 o'clock, if they're taking you to the gallows poles, what song do you want playing?
Man, that's a good question. There's got to be something that's like, I'm going to come get revenge on you sons of bitches. That would something like that would probably be what I would be playing. But this would be up there. I would definitely have this on up there.
Yeah. It's just a phenomenal album closer. One more thing. So the way I interpret the album work for this and for the singles, it kind of looks like Eddie just beats the shit out of Satan and then ends up controlling him. Yes. Like, how can you not love that?
Yeah, I can't believe we talked about it in Iron Maiden album and didn't talk about the cover. It's got Eddie, which is the kind of zombie guy that they're kind of their mascot, standing over the devil with like, so he's got the devil with like marionette strings, just like controlling him.
I love it. Everything about this is just perfection for me. This, like I said, this is going to be a top 10 album of all time for me, easy, maybe even top 5.
I'm guessing you don't have anything else with Number of the Beast. Let's jump into the 4th studio album, Peace of Mind. Came out May 16th, 1983 on EMI once again, Capitol Records in the United States.
Yeah, this came out a year and change later. And it's tough to follow the Number of the Beast, but this is still a pretty damn good album, man. Like, this is another one that I own on vinyl, obviously. And I would probably put it number 3 or number 4 as all-time great Iron Maiden albums.
It's terrific. It's got some more really standout tracks, but the whole thing beginning to end is phenomenal. Yep. Cover-wise, we've got Eddie in a straight jacket chained to the wall of a padded room, looking pretty grumpy. Pretty sick. So let's talk about the lead-off track here, Where Eagles Dare, which is a wonderful song to kick off an album.
Yeah.
Based on a Clint Eastwood movie by the same name, by the way.
Oh, really? Have you
seen that movie?
No, definitely. I don't like Clint Eastwood very much.
It's a World War II Clint Eastwood movie. They sneak into a Nazi stronghold up in the mountains or something to kill them all.
Okay. Yeah, makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a phenomenal opener. Everything is just so tighter and perfectly together. Like, they're just a massive machine. And I think this is a really underrated Iron Maiden track. And it just pounds and grinds for 6 minutes. And I love it.
Does. Track two, Revelations.
It's doom, but in major notes.
Yeah, and they do eventually speed it up a lot and get really going in that one, too.
Yeah, I like when Bruce Dickinson's like, go! And things just...
Yes!
Yeah.
Just cut loose.
Yeah.
All right, I didn't have much else on that one. Track three, Flight of Icarus. Terrific. Terrific.
Yeah.
Incredibly heroic sounding kind of song. I bet this one's fun in concert. Do they play this at the concert? Because I would love to scream along with this. Fly on your way like an eagle. Like,
yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah, I wish they had. They only played one track off of Peace of Mind. So this is the first album with Nico McBrain, the drummer. Mm-hmm. And he crushes it on this. But I'm with you, man. But apparently the band and critics really didn't like this.
Really?
And yeah, I don't know why. Some people thought it was a little soft, a little campy for them, but this is still better than most metal coming out around that time. I don't know, man. I was singing out loud to this listening.
Me too. Die With Your Boots On, another one I'm definitely going to sing along to every time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fun one. That's a pretty dang fun one.
Is that one about a specific conflict? Because I know The Trooper is. That's the next song on here. That's about a very specific conflict. But this one, I don't know if it's about anything in particular. Maybe World War One, something like that. But it mentions people.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, but, I mean, people are kind of being thrown into a battle coming out of the trenches. You have no idea what's going on. You just kind of serve the man in the system.
Right. And that's lyrically what it is. It's, you're gonna mm-hmm. If you're going to die, die with your boots on, but you got to go. You don't have a choice. We don't get to decide who's doing this. We don't get to decide why this is happening. You're just going to have to go fight, which, I mean, that's definitely World War One track. First track on side B, The Trooper. Now, I know exactly what this is referencing.
Name
this
a better song about the Crimean War.
Dude. This is a song about the charge of the Light Brigade at the Battle of Balaclava, which took place in 1854, which is part of the Crimean War. What a freaking monster of a track. What a great track. He's brought the galloping bass back. I like when there's a song about the horse. Steve Harris is just going full on galloping bass mode.
Dude, it's just running towards you from, you know, you take my life, but I'll take yours too. You fire your musket, but I'll run you through. Oh my, and then the so this is the one they played live, obviously.
Yes.
And man.
And he's on the bass. Dun 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 bum bum pick a bunk pick a bunk pick a bunk pick a bunk pick dun 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 dun. Like, so good. I can't believe he does that with two fingers. Yeah. An all time classic of the genre. Lyrically it's perfect for the music, which it's feels like a wild cavalry charge, which is what it's about. So
yeah.
Let's see. Still Life, track six.
So I think this is the first and maybe only Dave Murray credit on this album. But one thing that I love so much about so many Iron Maiden tracks is it seems like almost everyone gets a credit. And we've talked about this with other albums in the past, but there are like four or five of the band members get credits for songwriting here. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, they're rolling deep. It's definitely stylistically a little different from a lot of the stuff on the album, but still pretty cool. Like when he screams nightmares in the chorus.
Yeah.
Great.
Quest for Fire. I want to know how you feel about this, and hopefully you're paying attention to the lyrics.
Immediately grabbed by the first line, in a time when dinosaurs walk the earth. I'm hooked there, but the song is about cavemen trying to find / create fire, cave people. So they're talking about a time when dinosaurs walked the earth. So let me tell you this, Joey. It's been a long time since dinosaurs walked the earth.
Yeah.
And I have an interesting factoid for you here. So the Stegosaurus went extinct approximately 90 million years before the appearance of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. What's interesting to that is that the first human being appeared 65 million years after the Tyrannosaurus Rex went extinct. So Tyrannosaurus Rex is closer to humans than it is to Stegosaurus. For this song,
I wonder what's going to be the 65 million year species from now, where people just are like, actually, humans are closer to
sentient mist. It's just this mist with like a brain. But anyway, back to the song. We could pretend like dinosaurs were running around with cavemen at the time.
Incredible concept.
I'm in. Yeah. So you know what's funny about that? It's something I think about a lot. Like the turning points for humanity. Because there's so many different key things that have happened to humanity. And harnessing the power of fire is a huge one. So I think about that kind of crap a lot. I'm always thinking about that kind of stuff. Cool thing to write a song about.
No doubt.
Trek 8, Sun and Steel. I think this is maybe about a samurai or something along those lines.
Yeah, I think
definitely
so.
A guy with a sword, no doubt about it. I didn't have much to say. My only note on this was, I like this song. Hell, I love this whole week. There wasn't a bad song on any album this week.
I agree. Did you have anything on To Tame the Land or To Tame a Land?
Not really. It's kind of weird. It's got some references to Dune. Yeah. Which is a 1965 science fiction novel by Frank Herbert.
There's something about the bass on that. It's almost like Pixies' Sonic Youth type of thing. It was kind of grungy and groovy. Yeah, it's experimental, absolutely. But still a nice closer. But yeah, to your point, I'm absolutely with you, man. So first off, with Iron Maiden, my first thought was Number of the Beast, 1982, Peace of Mind, 1983, Power Slave, 1984, Somewhere in Time, 1986, and Seventh Son of a Seventh Son, 1988. Like, what a fucking run of five strings.
Yeah. I wish I had Power Slave. Power Slave is the one I really, truly want. But
that's one that, funny enough, I almost listened to because I thought that's what we were supposed to listen to. Not that I would have been disappointed, but yeah, man, I'm with you. I enjoyed every song. I enjoyed every album. I think this might be my favorite week.
It'll be hard to top it, for sure.
Yeah.
It's definitely my favorite week up to this point, except for maybe when the Dixie Dregs blew my mind. Just absolutely shattered my brain. But beyond that, I mean, and that's one band. This was three bands, six albums, and there wasn't a bad song on it. I mean, maybe Sailing to America. Sorry.
Sam. Yeah, that was... But since it's about the U.S., I'm like, you know what?
I even like that one. Yeah, I was in. So, yeah, my favorite week by far, of just musically speaking, by far my favorite week. So, didn't see that coming. What you got? What's my new wave of British heavy metal? Didn't see that coming question.
So, Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, and Saxon, they're all named after pieces of history from long, long ago. So, Jay... The year is 1976, you're in a gritty English town, and you and your boys are looking to jump on this new wave of British heavy metal train right as it's rolling out of the station. What figure or moment or item or whatever from antiquity are you naming your band after?
I'm glad you said item, because that's the first thing that popped in my mind. I was like, all right, okay. So I would go with diadem, which is
what's that?
It's a word for like a crown. It's another word for a crown. Diadem. D-I-A-D-E-M. It's a specific type of crown.
That is awesome. Like, I can even picture what the font looks like.
Yes, exactly.
It's going to be kind of like a fading gold. It's going to be thick. Yeah.
Yeah, and people are going to have to look up what diadem is, which, not bad. I mean, it's not a real commonly used word, but I think it's, it's just obscure enough to be cool. Is what I would say.
Sure. Yeah. That's
kind of like Saxon actually is kind of along this. It's just like people know the Vikings. They didn't say Vikings. They didn't say, you know, the Franks. They said Saxon, which cool ass name.
Yeah, man. That's top shelf. That's a name that I feel like you need to start a band just so you can use that name.
All right. I mean, I'll do what I can. All right. So
no pressure.
Do you have one? What would yours be? If you got one, I want to hear it.
I don't know, actually. I forgot to think about what my answer would be. The first thing that comes to mind would be Tapestry, because the Bayou Tapestry and like how apocryphal it supposedly was.
Or like like a gauntlet would be cool, because like those metal gloves that they wore, like gauntlet.
Yeah.
Battle axe.
Yeah.
These are all songs by Diadem.
We're writing it now.
All right. Here's my didn't see that coming question.
Hit me.
My copy of The Number of the Beast, for a while, I didn't believe it was actually from the time period because it's in such wonderful condition. This last time, though, when I pulled the album out, something else came out. I have a little order form here for the Iron Maiden fan club with a bunch of different things you could purchase on it. Yes. So I'm going to read you some prices. I'm going to give you a budget, and you're going to tell me what you would buy with the amount of money I'm giving you, okay?
Okay.
So Iron Maiden t-shirts.
I feel like I need to write this down.
Iron Maiden t-shirts, $9.
Okay.
Here's my favorite part about this. There are three designs it shows. It's got one, cover of Killers, two, Made in Japan, which is just Eddie with a samurai sword, and number three, Number of the Beast. So you could get any one of these items with any one of those three designs. Okay.
Okay.
So let's go. T-shirts, $9. Sweatshirt, $15. Ladies top, $8. Baseball jersey, $12. Baseball cap, $6. Patches, $3. Stickers, $1 a piece. Buttons, $1 a piece. Posters, $3 a piece. Wristbands, $6. So if I gave you $20 and I said, Joey, what would you order? Here's $20. What are you picking? What are you walking home with?
Well, first off, I want to know if this fan club still exists.
Me too.
Secondly, so I am for sure. How much was the sweatshirt?
Sweatshirt's going to take up a lot of your budget. It's $15.
Ooh, it's taking up a lot of budget, but... Mm-hmm. Is there anything more metal than wearing a sweatshirt in the summer?
Hell yeah.
Okay, so I'll go with the t-shirt since that was $9.
Okay, that's $9. Other options now, $9. That eliminates the baseball jersey and the sweatshirt from your other choices, but you still can choose from baseball cap, ladies top. Baseball cap, $6. Ladies top, $8. Patches, $3 a piece. Stickers, $1 a piece. Buttons, $1 a piece. Posters, $3. Wristbands, $6. The wristband is studded with belt buckles, by the way.
The hat's out of the question because I hate covering my hair because it's so beautiful. The wristband?
Wristband is $6. Okay, so you've got $5 left. Do you want a poster and a couple buttons? A poster, a couple stickers, a patch?
I want patches and,
gotcha.
And a couple buttons so I can
fill out my denim. So you do one patch and three buttons. I'm with you. There you go. That's a good order, man. That's a good order. It's so funny. There's a clip-off coupon at the bottom that I could cut off, and, like, fill it out and tell it what I want, send it in.
You should try it just to see.
I don't want to ruin it. I would. If I didn't ruin this thing, this awesome thing that I found, I would do it.
What if you photocopied it?
I wonder if they would. I'll do it.
Shit, man. Send it to me, and I'll try it.
I'll send you a photocopy of it.
Oh, my God. This is a blast. Ready to run to the hills, letting people know how much you love this podcast? Well, please subscribe, give us a 5-star rating since a 666-star rating isn't available, and tell others about us. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at JandJoeyPod. We have a Buy Me a Coffee. You can find those things in our Spotify playlist through the links in our show notes. That's in the link tree. And as always, actually, I'm going to switch this up. First, I'm going to say up the irons and be good to each other.
Denim and leather brought us all together. It was you who set my spirit free.